Welcome to Be Nice or Leave. I'm your host, Polly Hammond. In a world where businesses are facing new challenges and heightened competition, empathy is becoming an increasingly important tool to better understand your customers, improve communication, and ultimately lead to increased profits. Through interviews with business leaders and experts, this series explores the ways in which empathy can help organizations overcome these challenges, to be better and to do better. Most importantly, we'll hear from the people who have made it happen and can see the positive impact it has had on their organization. So whether you're a business leader, an entrepreneur, or simply someone interested in the intersection of empathy and business, Be Nice or Leave is the podcast for you. In this episode, we're joined by Janie Brooks, Managing Director of Brooks Wine and Oregon's Wine Person of the Year. But wine was not always Janie's path. When her only brother died unexpectedly in the middle of the 2004 harvest, the local wine community rallied together to keep his dream alive. Struck by their generosity and guidance, Janie knew that Brooks needed to carry on that legacy of community and collaboration. Today, she shares her experience building an award-winning, purposeful wine business. Let's get into it. Lovely Janie Brooks, I am so pleased to welcome you today to Be Nice or Leave, our very first episode. And I really can't imagine doing this with anyone else. We go way back with Brooks. I know a lot about how you make decisions, how you lead the team. And when we were developing the concept for this series, there were so many pieces of your business that were really inspiring. So I can't think of another person I would prefer to have on from day one. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm very honored.
Let's give a bit of an intro to you and what you do. You are the managing director of Brooks Wine in Willamette Valley, Oregon.
Right here in Amity.
Tell me a little bit about Brooks.
So we are a biodynamic winery that makes about 20,000 cases a year. We have been in business. This is our 25th year in business. We were founded by my brother, Jimmy Brooks, back in 1998, and he got a lot of inspiration from being overseas and spending a lot of time in France working different harvests, and came back home to Oregon, which is where we're from, and decided to pursue a career in the wine industry. And he was a fairly early entrant. You know, most of the industry here started in the 70s, so he was kind of that second generation, but very eager to make a statement and make a difference. So he came right out of the gates with ideas about regenerative farming, restoring the reputation of Riesling. Obviously, there's so many good Rieslings in Europe, and he couldn't figure out why they weren't so great here in this cool climate. And we've been carrying on his philosophy and his mission for the last 20 years.
You also were just named Oregon's Wine Person of the Year, which is pretty exciting, I would say.
It is. It is. And being up here, it's very strange because I'm on the cover of the Oregon Wine Press. And so to see my face on a magazine is very different. But it came about, there's a new editor for the industry in that magazine. And for the last 10 years, the people that have been honored had like either retired, some of them had passed away. And she really wanted to focus on somebody who is like relevant today and still has an opportunity to continue to make a difference. So very, very honored. I was very surprised when I got that call.
I mention it because I know that you're quite reticent to sort of sing your own praises, although you are very good at building the whole community. And I do want to talk about that in the context of specifically what this podcast is about, which is the role of empathy in building businesses. It is how do we walk a mile in our customer's shoes or in our stakeholder shoes, our employees, whoever it might be. And I do think that the award is a testament to how you lead your team, how you communicate with your customers, how you actually have adapted over, you know, the course of the past 20 years. So I thought we would dive into that and kind of start going all the way back to the beginning with the community who enfolded you into this 20 years ago when Jimmy passed away. Because this was not your dream in life. You didn't wake up and decide that you wanted to run a winery or be a winemaker or be a somm or all of the things that you know now.
That is very true. My brother passed away unexpectedly from an aortic dissection back in 2004, right before harvest. And he really had made a great name for himself and his wines and his philosophies and the things he was trying to do. And so when he did pass away, a group of other vintners got together and decided to help the brand continue for at least that first year. And I was asked to help on the business side because they couldn't take that on too, as well as making all the wine. And I said yes, because I didn't really have a choice. My brother was divorced, our parents had passed away, I'm his only sibling, he had an 8-year-old son, and somebody was gonna have to take care of his affairs. And lucky for me, as I got deeper and deeper in the industry and getting to know the people that, you know, I was surrounded with, I fell in love with it. I couldn't imagine, I mean, I was an accountant, and I was in super competitive healthcare, and nobody there helps each other at all. So I was very taken by this group of people and their passion and their desire to help and to support me. And so I am still here.
They're still a part of your world, of your environment. They're still in and out of the tasting room. What does that feel like?
You know what? It is, it's an honor in a lot of ways that they have kept their relationship with me. I feel, you know, they all have their own businesses and their own priorities. And I could have been an afterthought, but the fact that we still engage together, I actually have some of them coming over to the winery tomorrow night, which is very exciting. We sit on a lot of boards together still. So they're still very much a part of my life. When I need advice, I call a lot of them because I know that they have my best interests in mind, and they've given me that from the very beginning and have that trust and faith in me. So it's special. It's a level of friendship that I didn't have, and people who I never would have known, you know, had I not stepped into this role.
So a couple of years ago, when the Oregon fires hit, you launched a growers relief fund. And I think that, you know, I kind of piggyback this on the story of your community, because it does make you very conscious of what the financial challenges that the wine industry in particular is dealing with now. To my memory, correct me if I'm wrong, you were one of only a handful of businesses or wine businesses who did ensure, take public action to make certain that all of your growers were financially secure over the experience of the fires. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, and I feel like, again, I got lucky that I had great advisors, because the person that I purchased the vineyard our estate vineyard from told me at that time to make sure I had federal crop insurance. He had always insured his business, definitely approached it, he did, from a business standpoint. And so when the fires happened, I knew that we had insurance for our vineyard. But what I didn't realize is that none of my other 20 growers, maybe two of them that were California-based companies who had fire experience, had insurance, but nobody else did. And, you know, a natural disaster like a fire, that's nobody's fault, right? So when you look at, you know, how do you take $1 million worth of fruit that you were supposed to be buying and take care of the people that, you know, spent their whole season farming for us, when we made the decision not to make wine. And so we were able to either find homes for everybody's fruit, but in most cases, we ended up paying through the grower relief fund some portion of what we would have paid anyway for grapes, even though we didn't take the fruit. And that testament has just gone a long way in terms of continuing to secure my relationships with those growers.
Are there these moments when you look at it and you're like, ooh, how do I balance the financial implications of my commitments, of my, you know, perceived obligations with the loyalty, the growth, you know, the bank, the expectations? Like, how do you weigh out those decisions?
You know, it goes back really to the human element and like why we're doing any of this, right? In terms of life and life being short and taking good care of people. And I couldn't get past looking at my winemaking team, who spend all year, you know, or maybe a year and a half producing the wines that they bring into the building, and how I could ask of them to make amazing wines out of fruit that I knew was going to be compromised to some extent. It, you know, to what extent we didn't know, but, you know, they look at me now and they're grateful, right? As sad as it was that they didn't necessarily have a vintage to produce that year, they also have seen the results and did work with some of that fruit to know it would have been impossible and an impossible task to make anything that, you know, would have stood up to the quality of what they had produced for so long and for what our customers were used to and for what our wine buyers all over the country were used to. The damage that could have been done would have been irreparable, I think, from a business standpoint, had we moved forward with that one vintage. So it was tough for sure, because we were out of markets for a long time. It's nice to be now on the other side of it, where we're back to having full vintages and product available all year round. And it was difficult in the moment, but I look back and I'm like, well, we didn't miss that much really by making that decision. It was the right decision.
Did it allow you to pivot into other things? Like, did this moment where you just had, you know, the key focus was not there, what did you replace it with? Or what did the winemaking team replace it with? Or the staff in-house?
You know, we had a lot of small production, single vineyard Rieslings and Pinot Noir. So we did have inventory that we were able to use in our tasting room, use in our wine club shipments. We had a lot of markets that didn't want the brand to not be present. So they brought in wines that they had never worked with before just to keep the brand's name out there. So there was a lot of support overall, and we did have inventory. It just wasn't of the majority of the stuff that we put, you know, most of our volume.
You've also taken a very personal, like super personal approach to your leadership of your team, but especially how you communicate with your audience. So would you mind sharing with us a little bit about the numbers of subscribers and how many people you actually talk to every week before we dive into that?
Yeah. So we have about 21,000 subscribers on our email. And I've always bit of the mindset that if you don't capture that information at the moment that you have that customer, how are you ever going to be able to maintain a relationship with them? So very fortunate that we have the size of the mailing list that we have. And, you know, COVID was scary and strange for everybody. And it was obviously something that we experienced that, you know, who knows if we will again in our lifetime, but it was definitely new for the vast majority of us in terms of something so significant. And I kept getting all these emails. It didn't matter what industry they were in, but they were all the same transactional email that didn't address that we're in a strange time or ask me how I was or are you healthy and okay? And it got me so frustrated that I thought, I need to connect with my community, right? I can't go see them. They can't come into the tasting room, but like, how am I going to stay in a relationship that I've worked, you know, for so many years to build? And so I started writing an email once a week. I write it personally. It takes me about 3 hours a week. I share stories. Sure, I talk about wines. I talk about what's going on at Brooks.
And you talk about yourself and your family, you know,
yeah.
You talk about what's happening in the world around us. Yeah.
Yeah. I put my email and my cell phone number in every single email and people have reached out, which is amazing. But that's,
and that's actually to interrupt that, that's the thing that I would really love to focus on for a minute is 21,000 people every week get your personal email address and your personal phone number. And honestly, you're the only brand that I know that does that. You're probably a bit more of an extrovert than I am. You know, how did that play out? Does your family look at you and say, Mom, Janie, what are you thinking? Why are you putting this out into the world? What has the response been when people are getting back to you? You know, are they sharing information that is effectively like the qualitative data that is so hard for businesses to get out of our audience? Are they giving you high fives? You know, are they telling you when things are wrong?
Yeah, you know, it definitely has made me approachable. So I do hear great things. I do hear high fives. I hear you know, criticisms and critiques when and they are duly noted. But I do think that over the, because I've been doing it now for almost 3 years. Is that right? Wow. People if they do come to the tasting room and have suggestions, they let me know. And they know that I'm going to respond to them and that I'm going to address it. And so I've really built a lot of trust and just given them a person behind the brand. I think that so many brands in our world, regardless of the industry, there's people running them, but they stay so objective and stale and non-personable. And there's no reason. I mean, this is my life. This is what I've committed my energy to for 18 years. And, you know, I'm doing it for all the reasons of just enjoying life and being human. And so why not have that connection to everybody who comes across our product?
Do you communicate things when things go wrong as well?
In my emails?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How personal do you make what goes out in the email?
You know, pretty darn personal. I wouldn't say that I talk about my family and kind of what's happening with my family. I will talk about me and I will talk about my team and I will talk about, you know, the challenges that we face, but it's always, you know, in the effort to make things better. I did ask in one of my emails, you know, in my aspiration to have the best wine club in the world, you know, what my mailing list and everybody that reads my email thought about that. I had a 60-page Word document, Polly, from the feedback people gave me. And in many ways, it was, you already are the best, you know, wine club in the world. And then in other ways, it was, well, this wine club that I have does X, would you consider doing Y? And really helps me shape making my business more approachable and in line with what people want. And I think that that's super important.
So when you go out and you talk to your peers and you say you're doing this, you know, what kind of feedback do you get? Do they look at you and say, ooh, you know, that's scary, I wouldn't want to put myself out there, or that's giving your customers an awful lot of power over your brand, or my team just wouldn't, you know, wouldn't be down with that? What's sort of the peer feedback on that approach?
You know, I think that for the most part, a lot of people in my position, peer-wise, are passionate about making wine. That's really what their focus is. It is not necessarily on marketing. It is not necessarily on the end consumer. It is about what they can do to make better wine. And so I think there's a little bit, you know, there's just not that many owners, I think, that are thinking about putting themselves out there to their customers. But for me, it's all about relationships, right? I'm here because of relationships. I survive because of relationships. And it's relationships across all the stakeholder groups, not just, you know, the industry winemaking peers. It's across my customers and it's across our suppliers and it's across, you know, the people that farm our vineyard and all the farmers that we work with.
And so let's talk about those stakeholders for a minute, because I think that certainly that element of understanding what our consumers need is foundational to building any business. How does that empathetic approach work in the context of a team? Because you are not always in Oregon. You have a large team. You know, there are a lot of moving parts. And I think that if we look at sort of the award that you've received or some of the accolades that have happened, or even the success of the business, a lot of that comes down to the way that you've chosen to lead your team, which is more, I would describe, as a galaxy than a pyramid.
Yes, I think that's very true. I think I have, I don't know, 7 or 8 direct reports. You have to trust people. You have to, you know, hiring and like understanding people is such an important part of who you hire and who you surround yourself with. You know, I've always been of the mindset that I am better if I have people around me that are better than I am at different things. And by surrounding myself with all of those different skill sets, it elevates the whole company and you take good care of them. You know, I've learned a lot since we're a certified B Corporation about what those measurements are in terms of taking good care of people. And it's about living wage and not just minimum wage. And it's about, you know, respecting people's livelihoods and their time off and their personal life. And, you know, for some people it's a job, for others of us, it is a part of our life and who we are. And we work hard because we love it. You know, I'm very fortunate that I have really my right-hand person, Chris Williams, who's our winemaker, who is a good friend of my brother's. And he and I have been on this quest of running Brooks together for 18 years and are doing it for the same reason. you know, part of what he and I, when we decided to do this, was to carry on Jimmy's philosophy. Sure, we've added our own components to it, but at the end of the day, we were doing it because we thought it was the right thing to do. And it wasn't about us and it wasn't about our egos. And we still use that as the lens that we look through in everything, how we treat our growers, how we treat our team, how we treat our customers, how we make our wine.
Now, is one of the challenges transmitting that, because you and Chris can come at this from, you know, this perspective of what is almost like stewardship or guardianship as opposed to maybe like dictatorship, right? That you come to it, but that has to funnel from you through your people out into the world, and your people being your tasting room staff who are on site, your distributors, your retailers, the whole network who is part of communicating Brooks. Can you just give us some pointers on how you've made that happen?
Being honest, I think, is a big part of it, and being real and approachable. And, you know, the rationale for the decisions that we make, we believe in and can explain them and do a good job, I think, of sharing those explanations, whether it be with the team or whether it be with a distributor, and why we didn't, you know, why we chose not to make wine in 2020, and what am I going to do to support them, you know, with this loss of product? Because for some of our markets, you know, we're a pretty big proportion of what they get to sell. You know, and I think because people understand why we make the decisions that we do, we have a lot of loyalty, whether it's from our farmers or from our suppliers or our distributors or our teammates.
Yeah, I think that we live in an era where marketers love the language of authenticity and transparency, which we all know kind of does my head in. When in fact, what it just comes down to is just be honest, you know, just cut the bullshit and tell everybody exactly why you're doing it. And I think also something that's really interesting about that is conveying the financial aspects of why we do what we do. Is that something that you choose to share with your team, that we're like, okay, the implication of X is Y, and here's how we have to, you know, here's how we have to make it up, and here's what needs to be done?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually have our all company meeting on this Friday. And I go over the financial results and whether or not we hit our budget and our goals and why we didn't and where we need to get to next year and how we're going to do it, and take in ideas and let everybody participate in that achievement and that plan, right, from the very beginning. And, you know, we're lucky that we don't have a lot of turnover either. So people are able to kind of stay the course and see this year over year over year. You know, what was normal pre-COVID is very different now. And we're still making adjustments, right? Back to our business and like trying to come out of COVID and changing the policies that we made that we did at that time, so everybody was safe. And those had financial implications on the business for sure. But walking everybody through that keeps them kind of on the train to help make the next steps forward.
So we've got the work that you do with your team, your leadership team, all the way down through to your tasting room. We've got your 21,000 subscribers who every week hear from you. You mentioned B Corp, and I think that we have to nowadays look at one of our key stakeholders, of course, is our land, you know, is our climate, is our planet, is our earth. Now, you were one of the earliest wine brands who was purpose-driven, who had a clearly articulated sort of impact goals and commitments. Can you tell us how that started and where it's brought you to today?
Yeah, it started with my brother and what he learned about farming when he was in Europe. And when he came back to Oregon and to begin his business, he was surprised that there wasn't more care being taken for the land, because it was much more commonplace where he had come from and gained most of his experience. So he was pretty emphatic from the get-go that he was going to farm biodynamically. He led a group. Actually, he'd created a group of other vintners who got on board with that. And so he was really kind of a thought leader when it came to that movement. And so I inherited that piece of it, right? And me personally.
And that's biodynamic with the Demeter certification and that angle of it.
Yes. And you know, that taught me a lot about farming, right? And just all the work that goes into farming and how uncontrollable Mother Nature is. And, you know, how if you're not, it's like everything, right? You got to nurture what you have so that you get the best possible product out of it. And so he really taught me that from a farming standpoint. We've added to that over the years because there's other facets to the business. There's other facets that we interact with that we want to have. I want to have that same thoughtful purpose behind. And so,
like what?
Well, like the greater planet, because I'm obviously doing my part for my 20 acres, and we oversee our growers who do their part, but it's a much bigger world, right? And I can't be perfect in what we do at the winery, but I can have other ways that I'm giving back on a greater, for the greater good, right? And so we joined 1% for the planet back in 2019. And so we donate 1% of our total revenues back to an environmental-based nonprofit. And we've worked with just one partner so far that we've given those funds to and been able to be very active with their whole movement towards regenerative agriculture. And so that's felt great. You know, the B Corp thing was important to me because it touched a lot of other parts of our business that farming doesn't, right? So it's our supply chain and it's our team. It's our transparency, it's our customer base, it's all of those things. And it really has made me more accountable to certain standards that I never would have thought about. I maybe never would have made a priority. You know, I always bring up this example, but like employee handbooks, like never would have been at the top of my to-do list. But being a B Corp not only has forced me to put a handbook in place, but it has allowed me to really evaluate what we are offering and how we are treating our employees and what tools we're using. And it's, everybody knows about it in the company. It's made me a better employee.
And one thing that I would say about B Corp, just to give a shout out, is anyone listening, even if you don't want to right now become a B Corp, it is one of the best ways to go in and understand what you should be looking at mm-hmm. as you scale, as you're hiring, as you're making, you know, sort of any of the decisions right down to who your partners are and recycling. Mm-hmm. And that checklist is free. You can go in and use that as a guide, whether you ever want to pursue B Corp or not. I recommend it to an awful lot of our clients and partners. So just big shout out for a great tool. So you've got B Corp, you've got Demeter.
Well, so 1% for the planet's part of that, but then we also are members of Ecology. So we are planting trees and producing energy through solar for every time somebody buys something at Brooks. So for every $50 that's spent at Brooks, we plant a tree. I use Ecology also to purchase enough offsets for all of the travel for our team. So whether it's their commute to work, whether it's me getting on an airplane, that's been super valuable. And there's breadth to, again, like I can't do everything perfect at Brooks, but I feel great about things like Ecology because the communities where those trees are being built, it supports, you know, that community and those jobs and the biodiversity and their climate and their culture. And, you know, it's so much bigger than me. And it feels great that we have an avenue that we can have a bigger impact in a broader way than, you know, just what we're able to do on site.
So let me ask you something about the impact and actually communicating that, because when you started out, we didn't have, you know, every other business on the planet is talking about being purposeful or having an impact. We weren't in the midst of climate change where all the wineries were saying we must do our part toward climate activism. How has communicating that impact changed over the past handful of years? Is it a more crowded space? Are you having to be more clear and articulate in what you're communicating?
Well, I believe in being clear and articulate because there's a lot of people in the space now and there's a lot of greenwashing. It doesn't matter what, you know, industry you're in. And as soon as I read the word sustainable, I'm like, where are the numbers? Back it up, right?
And so I'm an ex-accountant. Show me the figures.
Well, yeah. And like, and and demonstrate actually what you're doing besides just using a big word, you know? I mean, and it's such an overused word. You know, we measure so many different things. And I think quantifying and being specific, giving examples, is a way better way to communicate what we're doing versus just saying that we have all these certifications and we're sustainable.
Right. So it's really about showing measurable difference and making certain then again, the whole ecosystem. So your clients or excuse me, your customers can understand that, your team members can convey that, and kind of collectively you can, as I say, show, don't tell is the way that I like to couch that. I think one of the things that it brings up though, is that the flip side of empathy is vulnerability, right? When we put ourselves out there, when we make the effort to understand who our people are, you know, what matters to them right now, it means that we also open ourselves up to hear the challenges that are facing maybe our sector, our business, ourselves personally. And you work in alcohol, where we have a lot of data showing that people are becoming more mindful about how much they drink, or there are concerns about the social contract of wine. We've got the Canadian cancer organizations coming out and saying that there should, you know, we should have a cancer warning on every bottle of wine. How has your understanding of your people changed the way that you deal with tough topics?
Well, because we do the right thing at the end of the day, right? Like ingredient labeling, right, is a big conversation right now about putting ingredients on wine. And we've faced that before in Oregon, which was a really interesting conversation about varietals. It's like, just be forthright about what you're doing, right? If we were manipulating wines and adding all sorts of chemicals and whatever, I would be scared of ingredient labeling. But honestly, bring it on. I would be more than happy to figure out the right way to communicate what's in our wine, because I know what's in our wine. You know, it's an interesting, we're just starting a green committee at Brooks. Our first meeting is next week. It crosses all departments.
What is a green committee? Tell me about that.
Well, so we have everybody that, we have a lovely biodynamic gardener, Shannon, who, she keeps us extremely accountable for all of our efforts, whether it's the amount of paper we use when we print our menus, to whether or not the kitchen's composting their leftover scraps. And so we decided that we're going to put together a committee. So we have somebody from every department in the company. So there'll be somebody from our winemaking team. There'll be somebody from our wine club group. There'll be tasting room staff to talk about what can we improve and what can we do better. And then I'm going to open it up to our consumers, because I've gotten feedback. Right? Janie, you have outside heaters that use propane gas. Why don't you have solar? You know, but those are those conversations. Like, well, I can't afford solar. Solar is a great idea. I'd love to do it, but it's $150,000. So when I have that, you know, I'll consider doing it. I've gotten the bids, but there's just a lot of, I know there's more ways that we could get better, and heightening that awareness across our team, across all the departments, I'm really excited to do.
You have a long history of partnerships and of collaboration, which I think can be very challenging for businesses, because when you go into collaboration, you're acknowledging that somebody might spend a dollar with someone other than you. Can you talk to me a little bit about how you've used collaboration to grow the business, to grow your audience, but to also support, you know, initiatives local and perhaps far from you?
Yeah, you know, finding like-minded companies, regardless of what industry they're in, that approach their business philosophy similarly to we do, I want to support 100%, right? So I'm lucky because the B Corp network and the 1% for the Planet network, a lot of those companies, you know, that are already aligned with some of our philosophies because they've made those same steps as well. But, you know, whether it's another winery or whether it's a chocolate manufacturer that we work with so closely in Portland, like, why not use each other's businesses to help each other out? Part of what I can do is direct people to other companies that I think are doing the right thing and should be supported. Sure, at the end of the day, is it all, you know, there's only a certain pot of gold and pot of money for everybody, and how they spend that is a choice. But again, I feel like if I'm supporting other companies, if I'm leading my consumers to other great companies, that's a win for everybody.
So Janie, if you're looking at what's coming down the pike for wine, for businesses, for the economy, let's just say in the next 12 to 24 months, what would be your advice for how we can do better, be better, or communicate better? What can we take away from the way that you've grown Brooks after Jimmy died to make us all just that much more compassionate or responsible in how we do business?
You know, I think it's just important to look at something like a business as an opportunity to make a difference and to make a good difference. You know, I've always wanted Brooks to be a community gathering place. And I just love that not only do I have the space in person, but I have my collective community as part of our mailing list. And it's just really about trying to do the right thing at all times. I feel like wine is big, but Brooks is a small family winery, really, in the scheme of things. And I feel like anymore people know the difference between
big corporate
and there is a population out there that wants to support local, right? And that tends to be the locals. And I think, you know, being accessible, being approachable, whether it's your price points or the people in your business, it hopefully will drive success in the long run. Right. I mean, that's kind of that's the bet we're all taking and the bet that I definitely am taking. And, you know, Chris and I have talked about it from day one. It's like, if we go down, we go down the right way. It's not going to be because we got caught.
High five. What other initiatives do you have rolling out for 2023, Janie, to actually communicate better to your customers?
Well, because it's our 25th anniversary, we are going to go on a little roadshow around the country. Visit about 15 markets, and all of those markets, we are going to have a party for our customers and our wine club members who don't get the opportunity to come see us at Brooks. I will be there, right? I can't wait to put, you know, faces with so many names. Chris will be at a lot of them too, and we'll support our trade buyers when we're in those markets as well, and our distributors, and I can't wait to take Brooks on the road again, because we haven't been on the road for a really long time.
Thank you, Janie, so much. Thank you, Janie, so much for coming and letting me get back into the swing of podcasting after a very brief hiatus. I'm so glad to have you here. I know that you've got a busy, busy schedule with your all team meetings where you are living and breathing exactly what we're talking about here on this episode. So now tell me, how can people find you? If people want to subscribe to that newsletter and learn from you, how do they get there?
Brookswine.com, www.brookswine.com. And there's a subscription option on every page.
And all of the socials.
And social media. And they can always email me at janie@brookswine.com.
janie@brookswine.com. Thank you, janie@brookswine.com. It's nice to see you.
You too, Polly.
And that's a wrap. A great big thank you to Janie Brooks for joining us today. And thank you for tuning in. If you're interested in learning more about how empathy can transform your business for good, make sure to hit that subscribe button. And if you have any questions or feedback, I'd love to hear from you. You can reach me online at fiveforest.com or on social media at fiveforest. I'll add the links to the description. See you next time.